Therefore, because of being fully dependent on the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Akirti of defamation. That's a big word for all of you. Defamation means when someone defames you, or they criticize you, or they ruin your reputation. That's what the word defamation means. Yashasaho and fame. Jaya, a victory. Apajayoho and defeat. Api, even. Samaha, equal. Syat, one should be. Sukadukabhyam, with the distress and happiness. Mrityu, of death. Jivatayaho, or of living. Tata, as well as. So translation, since everything is dependent on the supreme will of the personality of Godhead, one should be equipoised in fame and defamation, victory and defeat, life and death. In their effects represented as happiness and distress, one should maintain oneself in equilibrium without anxiety. So there's no purport to this text. I'm going to read the next text with its purport, and then we'll speak a little bit. So text 15. Sattvam rajastamahiti prakriteir natmano gunaha tatra sakshinam atmanam yovedasanavadyate. One who knows that the three qualities, goodness, passion, and ignorance, are not qualities of the soul, but qualities of material nature, and who knows that the pure soul is simply an observer of the actions and reactions of these qualities, should be understood to be a liberated person. He is not bound by these qualities. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. As the Lord explains in Bhagavad Gita, in the 18th chapter, text 54, Brahmabhuta prasanatma na sochati na kongshati samak sarveshu bhuteshu maam bhaktim bhavate param. One who is transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments or desires to have anything. He is equally disposed to every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. When one attains self-realization, the Brahma-Buddha stage, one knows that whatever happens during his life is due to the contamination of the modes of material nature. The living being, the pure soul, has nothing to do with these modes. In the midst of the hurricane of the material world, everything changes very quickly. But if one remains silent and simply observes the actions and reactions of the hurricane, he is understood to be liberated. The real qualification of the liberated soul is that it remains Krishna conscious, undisturbed by the actions and reactions of the material energy. Such a liberated person is always jubilant. He never laments or aspires for anything, since everything is supplied by the Supreme Lord. The living entity, being fully dependent on him, should not protest or accept anything in terms of his personal sense gratification. Rather, he should receive everything as the mercy of the Lord and remain steady in all circumstances. So, Om Gana Tumadandasha Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, elsewhere in the Gita it is stated, Mamchiyo Vyavicharina Bhakti Yogena Sevate Sagunan Samati Jayetan Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate, that one who engages in devotional service, Mamchiyo Vyavicharina, Actually, it's an interesting statement. Let me analyze the first part of that verse. Avyavachari bhakti means unmotivated, undisturbed devotional service. It's not just engaged in devotional service. Mamchiyo avyavicharena, which means basically anyabhilashita shunyam jnanakarma navartam anukulyena krishnanam shilanam bhakti bhutamam. That one is engaged in devotional service without desire for fruit of gain, for liberation, or mystic powers. And then also, then one engages in devotional service to please Krishna, and he's active in it, and he does what Krishna wants. Those are the three qualities listed by Rupa Goswami for pure devotional service. He is active, not simply dreaming. He does what Krishna wants, and he does it with a mood to please Krishna. These are the three positive aspects of pure devotional service. And then I mentioned the negative aspects. And then also mentioned in the Upadeshamrita, Utsahan Nischaya Daryat Tatat Karma Pavartanat. That one must be enthusiastic, patient, and determined. This is all the constituent qualities of Avyavachari Bhakti. So, Mamchiyo Avyavachari, na? So we just analyzed the first line of that verse. Bhakti Yogena Sevate. If one serves Krishna using Bhakti Yoga, and actually Bhakti simply doesn't mean love. It means causeless love. It's not the same word we use in English like love. I love this, I love that, I love your car. Or the ladies say, I love your sari. But, isn't it? Or I love to go to the movies. Someone just said that they, before they came to Krishna consciousness, they loved Amitabha Bachchan. And now they like me instead of him. So anyway, that's interesting. I'll have to grow a beard so I look similar. And make it white. So, some of our devotees have already done that. So, anyway, so bhakti means, basically, the word bhakti also means anyabhi lashita shunyam jnanakarma anapatam, to serve without any other desire, the desire to please the object of one's love. So bhakti yogena sevate, and then, if one does that, then, and only then, sa gunan samatichai tan, then he overcomes or transcends sagunan, the modes, samati jaitan, the modes of material nature. And then brahma bhuyaya kalpate, he becomes established in Brahman, or spirit. So that means pure devotional service. So the question that arises is that very few of us are on that platform of pure devotional service, where we're just engaged in an unmotivated, undeterred way. Haituki apratiyata is another statement in the Bhagavatam. Savai punsam paro dharma yato bhakti adhoksaje. Ahaituki apratiyata yatma supersedate. And actually, this is interesting. That's an interesting verse. Savai punsam paro dharma. The topmost dharma, this verse states, is to execute unalloyed devotional service to Krishna. But then the word is used, ahaituki. It has no, cause, no material cause. A pratyate is never stopped under any circumstance. Happiness, distress, sickness, health, heat and cold, as mentioned by Prabhupada in the purport, and also the previous verse mentions that. So, and then under those circumstances, one becomes Krishna conscious. So vaipum sambara dharma yato bhakti yahoksaje. Ahaituki apratiyata yadma supratsidate. Then the soul is so satisfied that you don't even notice the modes of nature. Alright, that's a very exalted platform. So for the rest of us who are down to earth, were they earthlings, so to speak, what do we do? Well, Krishna tells us what to do, and I thought, found this a very interesting subject matter. In the Bhagavad Gita, he tells us how to identify, using our intelligence, different aspects of the modes of nature. Goodness, passion, and ignorance, of course. Modes, another word for guna is ropes. And Krishna also says in the Gita that nahi kaschit chanamapi jatatishtatiya karma krit karite yavasa karma sabra prakriti jayguna. Everyone is forced to act according to these modes of nature. So in order to be Krishna conscious or to act in Krishna consciousness when we're not quite pure enough to be transcendental, we need to identify the symptoms of the modes. You understand the symptoms of the modes internally and externally. Internally, because we need to control our senses. Vacho vega manasa krodha vega. We need to say that, hey, my mind is in ignorance right now. I'm going to ignore it. My mind is in passion right now. I'm going to ignore it. And externally, to avoid bad association. He's in ignorance. I'm going to ignore him, or I'm not going to stay away from him. Drinking is the mode of ignorance. I'm going to stay away. This food is in the mode of ignorance. I'm not going to eat it. Or in the mode of passion. So internally and externally, we have to be able to identify the modes. So actually, I took some notes on all the Bhagavad Gita verses that deal with the modes of nature, which is really interesting. Like, beginning with the 14th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the 14th chapter is called the modes of nature. I mean, you may wonder, why does Krishna write a whole chapter about the modes of nature? Also, the 17th chapter, a lot of it's about the modes of nature. And the 18th chapter is about the modes of nature. Why does Krishna do that? Just so we can identify what mode something is in and deal with it accordingly. So I wanted to mention some of these verses, which I noted down. So, you know the mode of goodness. It starts in the 14th chapter. It starts this way. I'm not going to read the specific verse. I'm just going to make reference to it in the 11th text of the 14th chapter. It makes specific reference to how do you know you're in the mode of goodness. And what's mentioned here is when all the gates of the body are illuminated by knowledge. Now, that's an interesting statement. What does it mean, a gate? Does anyone know? You know, a gate? I know what a gate is, but I mean, what does it mean in reference to the body? What? No, not exactly the senses. Yeah, nine openings. Navadware pure dehi. That pura, you have that word in Hindi? It's like a city or a town. Say pura. Mathura, pura. Like that. Jagannath Puri. You have that? So we're situated in a city of nine gates. And in the, it's interesting, in the story of Puranjana, it brings that metaphor even further. It says that Puranjana is living in the city of nine gates, and he's visiting each one of the gates to get enjoyment. Which is actually quite interesting. You know, so what are the gates? The gates are the two ears, the nostrils, the mouth, the anus, the genitals, like that. So, and the eyes too. So we're doing that in this world. We're visiting these gates from time to time. Like you go to the movies and you visit the eyes. And you're letting different enjoyment in through the gate. The idea is you're letting different enjoyment in or out through the gates. And then you go eat, and there's some more enjoyment going there. You smell some nice flowers. Of course, this is offered to Krishna. This is not Maya. So you smell some nice flowers, and you're visiting that gate. And then, of course, the sexual activity is the genitals. And you know, as far as the anus, then that it's, one even takes pleasure from, I mean, there's a story Prabhupada told about Gopal Bhan. You heard the story about Gopal Bhan? Gopal Bhan is a jester who was talking to the king one time. And the kings would always keep these jesters or jokers to entertain them. So what happened is that the king asked Gopal Vaan one time, "How do you feel?" And Gopal Vaan said, "I feel great after passing stool." And the king got annoyed. He said, "I don't want to talk to you again. You're so gross." So to teach the king a lesson, Gopal Vaan was on a boat one time with the king. He was rowing the boat. They were a nice excursion. And the king had a call of nature. And Gopal Vaan just sort of kept the boat in the middle of the river until the king practically exploded. So finally, the king says, "Take the boat in, take the boat to the shore." So he rows the boat to the shore. And the king runs out into the bushes. And Gopal Vaan says, "How do you feel, king?" And the king says, "I feel very happy after this." So that's that ninth gate, you know, that we're talking about. So what does it mean that one's gates are illuminated by knowledge? That means basically that one doesn't let anything in or outside of the gates, unless it's in relationship to mode of goodness activities. Like one eats food in the mode of goodness, one sees things in the mode of goodness, one hears mode of goodness music. You know, there's music in different modes. Did you know that? Like that. And then so then after that description, then let's hear about passion. So how do you know when you're passionate? You know, what are the symptoms? And it's also in regard to the nine gates. You become greatly attached to things. You know, "I must have it, I must have it." You ever see? Children especially are like that. "I must have something." And then greatly attached, intense endeavor, over-endeavor for something. Of course, even sometimes out of passion, people over-endeavor in Krishna consciousness. You know, they'll try to build a big temple before there's any devotees to be in the temple. I'm not saying we did that anyway. But I've seen that. That's over-endeavor. You know, you just like work day and night, and you install the deities, and there's more deities than pujaris. More deities than devotees in the temple. We almost have that here, isn't it? Of course, now we have more because I'm giving class, but on an ordinary day, someone's giving Bhagavatam class, the deities outnumber the devotees. Isn't it? You have so many deities here. I mean, how many sets? I haven't counted. So anyway, so that's that passion, fruitive activity, intense endeavor, uncontrollable desire and hankering. That's how you know you're in passion. Even in Krishna consciousness, if you're experiencing these things. And then in ignorance, you want darkness. You know, you just like have a frown on your face all the time. You're unhappy. You're depressed. You just want to sit. Inertia. Inertia means you just like can't get you going. That's what the word inertia is just like. It's actually a word that we learned in physics. Inertia, you know, what it takes to get something moving. It takes a lot of things to get you moving. And then madness. And finally, illusion. They're all manifest. That's how you know you're in ignorance. Instead of saying, blaming someone else, saying, "I'm feeling depressed because you don't love me or because you did this or you did that," just say, "I'm in ignorance." Be honest about it. Devotees should utilize these terms when analyzing the material world. And then Krishna goes on later on in the chapter, after two or three verses, to talk about what happens when one dies in different modes. If you die in the mode of goodness, you go to heaven. Because we're not interested simply in the mode of goodness, we're interested in the purified mode of goodness. And if you die in the mode of passion, you take birth amongst those who engage in passionate activities. You become a businessman or something. Baniya. Actually, in Kali Yuga, practically everybody has some passion in them. Even you go to the holy places, the pandas, they're simply interested in your money. And the doctors, what to speak of the doctors, They're performing unnecessary surgeries. Not this doctor. Not our doctors here. But anyway, they're performing unnecessary surgeries just to make money. For example, in America, it's called a cabbage they do on you. You know what a cabbage is? That's where you replace the arteries on someone. Unnecessary operation 99% of the time. And they do it, and they make like $50,000, $60,000, $70,000. In some of these countries, you walk into the hospital, and it's $1,000 just by saying Hare Krishna to the receptionist. Seriously. What to speak of, you have to take a ambulance. It's $2,000 or $3,000. You know, so people sometimes like drive their own car to the hospital and practically get in an accident because they don't want to. Anyway, we've talked enough about doctors. So doctors traditionally were a Brahminical activity. Anyway, so that's what happens if you die in the mode of passion. And if you die in the mode of ignorance, you take birth in the animal species. So activities in the mode of goodness result in happiness. Activities in the mode of passion result in misery. And activities in the mode of ignorance result in foolishness. So there's different analyses like that. From the mode of goodness, knowledge develops. From the mode of passion, greed develops. Same thing, but expressed in a different way. And from the mode of ignorance, foolishness, madness, and illusion develop. And then Krishna says in the 19th verse, he says, you should see that all activities, there is no other performer than these modes. Which is really an interesting statement. There's no other performer. In other words, the modes are doing everything and you're just being forced to act helplessly. As we quoted this previous verse, Nahika Sitchanamapi Jatati Shtitiya Karmakrit. And he knows, and it says that one who knows that and knows that the Supreme Lord is transcendental to the modes, he goes back to Godhead. So it's really important to understand these modes. Let's see. More statements by Krishna here. And this is interesting. Oh yes, this the 22nd, the 25th verse is interesting because it tells us how we should, what our attitude should be to the modes. In other words, the modes will come and affect our mind. So what do we do about it? And he says, basically, ignore it. Don't hate it. Don't like it. Because even if you get angry when the modes are acting, you'll be in the mode of ignorance. Let's say you get angry at the mode of ignorance. You're in the mode of ignorance. It's a trick. Or if you just like try to get out of the mode of passion by playing volleyball or something like that, then you're in the mode of passion. Isn't it? You say, I'm so passionate, I need to play basketball, volleyball, soccer, or rugby. So Krishna here says, O son of Pandu, he who does not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion, in other words, you don't hate the products of the three modes when they are present, or long for them when they disappear, who is unwavering and undisturbed through all these reactions of the material qualities, remaining neutral and transcendental, knowing that the modes alone are active, who is situated in the self and regards alike happiness and distress, who looks upon a lump of earth, stone, and a piece of gold with an equal eye, who is equal towards the desirable and undesirable, who is steady, situated equally well in praise and blame, honor and dishonor, who treats both friend and enemy alike, and who has renounced all material activities, such a person is said to have transcended the modes of nature. So in other words, tolerate. To not only tolerate, but to go on serving Krishna in spite of it. What is that? Atate nukampam sushamikshamanam bunjanavatma kritam vipakam. Ridbhag bapurvir vidadam namaste jivete yo mukti pude sadayabhak. Is that a worm crawling over there? In front of you? Centipede or something? I guess let him attend class as long as he doesn't bother anybody. So, in other words, if one tatenu kampam, if one is able to tolerate the actions of the modes and goes on serving Krishna with his body, mind, and words or heart, then one actually gets pure devotional service. So that's the key. You just tolerate. You just watch it like some movie. Instead of giving into it. When anger arises, don't give into it. Just say, oh, my mind is angry. Isn't that interesting? You have to disassociate yourself. I know disassociation is a psychological disease, like schizophrenia. But anyway, you have to disassociate yourself from it and just watch it. That's actually how you advance. What do you think, Nityananda? You just watch it happening. Oh, my mind is angry. Oh, my mind is hankery. Oh, my mind wants me to do this or that. And just like a Bollywood movie. You don't have to go to the movies to watch a movie. Just watch your mind. It's so interesting. Right? Because it can't, until we're pure devotees, it's not going to be controlled. Krishna says in the, Arjuna says in the Gita, 6th chapter, Chanchalahi manaha Krishna pramati balavadridam, tashaham nigraham manye, vayor eva shirushkaram. That it's difficult to control, it's like controlling the wind. So right now just watch it and don't give in to it. And, or like the, Nectar of Instruction says, what is it? Vacho vegam, manasakurta vegam, jiva vegam, udrapashta vegam. You have these pushings, but you tolerate them. It even says, Prabhupada says, if one is able to tolerate these things in the translation, then he can become a guru. It doesn't say one doesn't have these things, he just tolerates it. I mean, so basically, any of us can get angry at any time. Different things stimulate our anger. Like sometimes, if my computer doesn't work right, I get angry at it. And I feel like breaking it. But I don't do it. Isn't it? I just feel like... But then I realized I'd have to buy a new one. Because I can't live without a computer. So, in other words, you just watch it. Now I'm angry. And so what you do when you get angry, sometimes it's really heavy, you just take a walk and you start chanting Hare Krishna. Take a long walk, and when you come back, you don't feel like smashing your computer anymore. So anyway, so this is really the point that Krishna's making here. So that's the 14th chapter. And then in the 17th chapter, it's really interesting too, about faith. The 17th chapter is entitled The Divisions of Faith. So you can actually see different religions that are in different modes of nature. Wow. I mean, it's so wonderful. You can analyze religious beliefs according to modes of nature. Because Arjuna asked Krishna in the beginning of the chapter, if one doesn't follow authorized Shastra, is one's religion in the mode of goodness, passion, or ignorance? And Krishna answers in a very interesting way. He says, according to the mode the person is in, he is attracted to or develops a religion in a specific mode. In other words, the person makes the religion. Which is really, really an interesting statement. When a religion is not transcendental, what is it? Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam, coming from God, then it simply comes from the modes of nature. And you see that. And sometimes religion is starting as a transcendental religion when there's an authorized person coming down like Lord Jesus Christ. And then people contaminate it with the modes of nature. And even according to Lord Kapiladeva in the third chapter of the Gita, the Bhagavatam, that even if one has a pure religion, one may be doing devotional service in different modes of nature. Lord Kapiladeva is very explicit describing devotees in the mode of ignorance, devotees in the mode of passion and devotees, that worm is still there. Devotees in the mode of goodness. Like you see, what a devotee in the mode of passion is envious, proud, angry. You ever see that? A devotee in the mode of ignorance is not only envious and proud, he's a separatist. You know, he's thinking, for example, if one's thinking, my guru is better than your guru. And in ISKCON, if you have these different guru parties, that means, you know, people divide up into different sects. That's in the mode of passion and ignorance, according to Krishna. It's not that everything you do is transcendental just because you happen to be in a bona fide religious movement. A lot of the things you do are just impelled by ignorance or passion or goodness. And in goodness, one wants to enjoy this material world or wants liberation, according to Lord Kapiladev. In passion, a devotee wants to enjoy the world. And in ignorance, well, nothing happens. But in transcendental goodness, which is Vishuddha Sattva, one's mind is so much attracted, like a river flowing down to the ocean. This is Lord Kapiladev's instruction. Like the river flowing to the ocean, one's mind is automatically attracted to Krishna Katha. So if we want to be transcendental, we have to be immersed in Krishna Katha. So anyway, that's the 17th chapter of the Gita, and where Krishna describes religion in different modes. Just to give a brief summary, he says in the mode of goodness, people worship the demigods. That's the mode of mixed goodness, of course. In the mode of passion, the demons. And those in the mode of ignorance worship ghosts and spirits. Prabhupada actually said there were people in World War II who are worshiping Hitler. Can you imagine that? And of course, it doesn't mean that Ravana was in the mode of goodness because he was worshiping the demigods. He was worshiping Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. That doesn't mean he's in the mode of goodness. I mean, there's some goodness there. Because you don't find the modes generally isolated from the other modes. There's always some mixture. It's like colors. Like you have the three primary colors, red, blue, and green, right? So, is this table red, blue, or green? No, it's a mixture. Now, I'm not an artist, so I don't know what colors, but a pure red, this isn't even pure red here. There's all different shades of color, different mixtures of color. Just like if you're watching television, there's three types of colors there. It's called pixels. And these pixels mix to give you the colors of the whole spectrum. There's only three colors in the TV. Did you know that? There's not millions of colors in the TV. But these colors, if you go really close and you look, you'll see these little tiny what's called pixels. And they combine. So the modes of nature are something like that. So Ravana was a mixed modes. Sometimes he had a little tinge of goodness, sometimes a little tinge of passion, a lot of passion, and mostly ignorance because he liked to eat human beings. He was a Rakshasa. And so then Krishna in the Gita, after talking about these religions and who people worship in different modes, Krishna talks about austerities and penances in the different modes of nature. Then Krishna talks about food in the different modes of nature. You know, food in the mode of goodness gives you health. It gives you good fat in the body. And food in the mode of passion is too hot, too spicy. And food in the mode of ignorance is putrid, stale, and decomposed. So every aspect of life is actually analyzed by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. Every aspect of life. That's why we should read these chapters and study so we can identify these different modes of nature. I can go on, but there's not enough time for class. So that's the purpose. My humble request is that the devotees study this Bhagavad Gita. All the things, even though the modes of nature may appear to be very boring to you, this whole description, but this is to help us progress and control our minds and ultimately focus on Krishna. And then when you're a pure devotee, it doesn't matter anyway, because you're immersed in Krishna consciousness. But none of us right now, oh, of course, I hope I'm not offending anybody. Most of us are not pure devotees. There may be some of you, like Rishikesh or something like that. But most of us are not pure devotees, so therefore we need the intelligence platform to identify things, to control the mind, to engage in devotional service, and not succumb to the senses and to tolerate the pushings of the modes of nature. So any questions or comments? Questions, comments, arguments, problems, issues, disturbances? Nobody asks questions here. Who knew you asked a question?
The ultimate controller of the modes of nature is Lord Krishna.
Yes.
But they are also secondary controllers.
Yes, secondary controllers.
What is the role of the secondary controllers in terms of how they act on us?
Well, the role is to control the modes of nature under Krishna's plan or Krishna's direction. I mean, they're just following the direction of Krishna. That's all. I mean, Daiva Yesha Gunamayi Mama Maya Dharachya. That's the function of the demigods who control the modes of nature.
They will be following Krishna's instruction. In other words, they will be following Krishna's Paramatma in our heart.
Yeah. I mean, they're following Krishna Paramatma in their own heart. You know, following Krishna's instructions, how to apply the modes of nature to the specific individuals. And the ultimate purpose, the word in Latin is teleos, the ultimate purpose is to teach us that this place is not a place for us. I mean, after you've gone up and down, and suffered enjoyment, you know, back and forth, it's like an abuse. You know, if you live with an abuser, this is actually an interesting example. If anybody's lived with someone who abuses them, like if a woman has a man who abuses them, or a man who has a woman who abuses them, or whatever, or parents who abuse the children, it goes in cycles. This is something, if you study psychology, you'll find that out. Sometimes, the person you're living with will be so nice, you'll forget about the abuse. And then, about 2 weeks later, they're so nasty that you hate them and want to run away. And then 2 weeks later, they're nice again, and you feel guilty about feeling bad about them. That's the nature of abuse. I mean, if anybody does counseling will understand that. So material nature is like that. It's abusing us. And like if you're being abused in a marriage relationship or something like that, you need a counselor to get out of it. Because of the alternating nature, you actually forget about the abuse after that. You think things are getting better. Wow. It's changing. He's changing. But then it happens again. So in the same way, we need a spiritual master to tell us it's not going to change. It's going to be sukha and dukkha. You're going to ride the roller coaster up and down.
Why is material nature so relentless in terms of punishing us and abusing us and so forth?
Because we're so relentless in forgetting Krishna. That's why. And as soon as we learn that our whole business is to serve Krishna, the material energy actually becomes an aid to us in serving Krishna. Instead of becoming an impediment to our happiness, the material energy assists a devotee. But she's testing you. It's a test.
Material nature is so dangerous and sometimes so cruel that it makes us think that why Krishna is doing this to us.
I spoke about this the other day when you weren't there. My mother was so cruel, it made me think, why is my mother doing it to me? But she was doing it for my benefit. You understand? So, yes, sometimes you don't understand why. I've had experiences in my life that I don't understand why Krishna is doing something. It takes me 20 years later, I can look back and say, that's why he did it. When it happened, I don't understand. You ever experienced that? I said, why? Why me? I'm supposed to be a great devotee. Why is it? I'm a sannyasi, Krishna. You know, I'm chanting your name. Don't you love me anymore? But then I understand, you know, it takes a while. So it does take a while. It's what do they say? Hindsight is 20/20. Did you ever hear that expression before? Hindsight means looking back. 20/20 refers to perfect vision. Like if you've gone to an optometrist, like if someone has 20/20 vision, they're perfect vision. If someone has 20/40, they need glasses. So our hindsight, looking behind us, we have perfect vision if we can stay in Krishna consciousness. That's why Krishna did it. That's why Krishna had this person misunderstand me. That's why I got this disease. That's why whatever happened, right? So that, it's not cruelty, it's Krishna. I mean, what did the bull think when the bull was being hit by a personality of Kali? He didn't say, well, the fault is the person who's hitting me, Kali. He tried to ascertain the reason for it. Understand the reason for it. So Krishna has a reason. And it's good to pass the test, because if you don't pass it now, you have to take it again. Right? That's why you better pass it now. You think, oh, this test is too difficult, I'm not going to take it. Well, you're going to have to take it next year. So better to pass it now, right? If you want to be a doctor, you have to pass your test. Some people spend 30 years in medical school before they. So we want to spend a minimum amount of time in pure devotional school. Okay, on that happy note, about the modes of nature, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaura Prabhupada.